But Gerrard! Oh, yes! Here's Rooney!
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of FPL 360. And unlike Fulham, we're not just going to wing it.
Yeah, I was really excited for deadline day. Unfortunately, it kind of underwhelmed.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of what's happened today.
The one thing I think we've all come to agreement on is that Fulham has too many wingers. And we just need to start there, because signing Lazar Markovic on loan, they now have brought in Babel and him in this window. They have Sessegnon, they have Schürrle. Before we even talk about who's going to play, why would they do this, considering defenders is what they needed?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that Babel has taken Sessegnon's spot in the starting lineup, and that for whatever reason, Ranieri doesn't trust Sessegnon, even though he produced in his first few appearances under him. The Markovic one, literally, I don't understand it.
It's so confusing for me, especially because they signed Andre Schürrle on a two-year loan. So that is anticipating you're going to be using him. My thought is maybe because Babel and Schürrle are both older, Ranieri's worried about starting on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, they must not trust Schürrle getting past a certain minutes limit, but they still have bigger needs than a winger.
Yeah, the big thing for me, and this is more to poke fun at Liverpool, when they signed Lazar Markovic initially, it was for $25 million from Benfica in 2014. He's fallen pretty far from there, but rather than harping on that, is there any fantasy relevance in his arrival at Craven Cottage? It's more of a joke question. I know there's none, but at the same time, I figured since we started there, we might as well.
No, it's more just literally, I don't know. I can't tell you how they're going to employ him. This move literally makes zero sense for a team fighting in the relegation zone, unless they think that every game from here on out is going to be like their game against Brighton. Like, maybe we're going to somehow see a 4-2-4 out of them.
Yeah, it's clearly, we're seeing from Ranieri, he's prioritizing goals over defense. However, they did actually make another signing today, and that was Håvard Nordved from Hoffenheim in the Bundesliga. This is an interesting move. He's a central defender who can also play in defensive midfield. And for those who might have heard his name before, he did have a cup of coffee at West Ham last season. It's interesting they're bringing him in. I mean, do we think this means Callum Chambers goes back to center back, or do we see some sort of alternating between these two?
Given how Ranieri spoke about Chambers, I don't really see a situation in which he gets moved out of his current role. So, as of right now, I see him as a center back, but I don't really think Nordveit's a good center back in a back two.
Yeah, is this the signing? It's obviously underwhelming, considering you and I both agree on that Fulham needed to sign defenders, and they went out and got someone who couldn't get in the first team at his last two clubs. Do you think between Markovic and Nordved, this is enough to save Fulham?
I'd have to see how they're being employed. If they're going to just slot in somewhere in the current lineup slash bench, no. If we've got a tactic shift in the cards, maybe.
Yeah, speaking of a tactical switch, probably the biggest news from deadline day was the signing of Michy Batshuayi for Crystal Palace.
That's the biggest news. Wasn't Chelsea trying to sell Michy Batshuayi to literally half the league, but they didn't want to buy him?
Well, I'm surprised that he ended up at Crystal Palace, considering, well, I'm not surprised he didn't end up at Tottenham, because we knew that they were charging him a jacked up rate.
They were charging 6 times the loan fee of what they were charging to other clubs to Tottenham.
So, I mean, he comes into Crystal Palace. Do you see this as in terms of fantasy, we'll get to a couple other moves. Is this probably the most relevant one?
Out of the moves that happened today?
Yeah.
Nah, I don't think so. I definitely think it's a relevant move, because considering the firepower the Palace has on the wings, he will have better service than most strikers in the Premier League.
where do you think he'll end up at FPL? I'm guessing, I know that IU started around 5.5. Do you think he would be jacked up just because of his
name? I think with the Chelsea pedigree and the fact that he has scored multiple goals, like double-digit goals in the top flight in a league because his year at Dortmund was amazing, he's probably going to end up more in the 6.5 range.
So I'm assuming he's going to walk into that team. Obviously, he's going to displace Ayo. He's going to be up front.
The real question is, what to do with Christian Benteke?
Yeah, that's a good point, because Benteke is coming back from being out for God knows how long. He's never really hit his stride at Palace. I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing that's Batshuayi's job to lose, even with Benteke coming back. You know, with Benteke in the mix, though, is he someone that you would be using a high waiver claim on?
I don't know. Like, I definitely would want to add Batshuayi. But at least in Fantrax leagues, depending on how your position set are set up, Ford is one of the deeper position sets out there. If you're someone who's actually playing IU, then obviously you're getting Batshuayi if you can.
Oh, I think if you've been playing IU, you have bigger issues at hand.
But that's why you need Batshuayi and anyone who's starting it forward.
Like, I mean, in terms of what you're going to get at this point, obviously you need to add Batshuayi because you're not going to find any forwards, because most people have probably already in their leagues have had Higuain already added. You're not going to be adding a player classified as a forward with a higher ceiling at this point.
Yeah, unless Markovic comes in as a forward, which you still don't want. There weren't really many forwards signed today.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of other attacking options, I guess we'll go to Almiron from here. So, Chuck, I did not pay attention too much to MLS this year. What is your take on Almiron? And I guess the first thing is, is his price tag at around $27 million, is that too much?
I wouldn't say it's too much, considering the fact that Almiron has come into two teams at his age, won two championships over the past 3 years, has starred for the Paraguayan national team, which is one of the up-and-coming national teams in South America, and can literally do almost everything in the attacking third for a team while having a good enough defensive work rate to not be a liability.
So the bigger question, at least I'm thinking about from fantasy perspective, and I guess we'll just give the number first, he's at $6 million in FPL. He's walking into a Newcastle team. They obviously have an offensive deficiency. Do you think Newcastle will change their formation or revert to playing like a 4-4-1-1?
Yeah, I mean, I think that more likely than not, because Newcastle really only plays that 5-4-1 in when they're playing against teams stronger than them, which is unfortunately most of the league right now.
Yeah.
But I think this, along with the fact that they also signed an actual left back today, meaning they don't want to play Matt Ritchie back there, signals that they're looking to go back to a 4-4-1-1, which would mean that Almiron's playing right behind, if not almost next to, Rondon.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Almiron is that I would have liked to see him a little bit cheaper in FPL for me to make that initial move. I would have liked around 5.5.
Oh, yeah. If he was at 5.5, he'd be in my team now.
I think in Fantrax leagues, in draft leagues, anywhere you have to put in a waiver claim,
he's my top priority.
Yeah, if you were hypothetically in a league with Chuck or I, you would be spending more than the next person has in waiver dollars to get him. And it's mainly because there's more naysayers about this move than there are people being positive. And moving into a team that needs offensive creativity, the kind of stuff he can provide, it's hard to see him being a flop.
And we also have to think about the fact that most of the naysayers just don't understand what MLS is becoming as a league. Like, yes, the defenses aren't necessarily as good as they could be, but MLS is moving more into a league that can develop attackers for the rest of the world. unfortunately, this means that Almiron does come with a lot of pressure on him to perform, but I think if anyone can handle it, it's him.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing to say about him is that you have a club in Newcastle that refuses to spend money, and they just broke their transfer record. Granted, it's kind of weird to talk about that, because if Michael Owen was their previous holder of the transfer record, if he was going the likes of him now, it would be so much more. But Newcastle doesn't spend money, and they spent this much on him. So there's got to be more good than bad.
There's also the fact that he's went from a tactically astute manager in Tata Martino to another one in Rafa Benitez. And seeing some of Benitez's quotes about Almiron, like, they've been watching him for a long time. And this is basically because it's not like Newcastle's going to go make a flurry of moves. Benitez said, this is my guy. You do what you do can to get him, or I walk.
I think the hardest part about projecting Almiron from a fantasy perspective is that I'm having a hard time thinking of a comparable asset. And for a lack of that, I mean, how would you project him for a draft league? Would you put him around a midfielder four? Do you think a midfielder three?
I think he can climb as high as low-end midfielder two.
Really?
Because it's not only will he be helping to create offense, he can also do it on his own, and he'll likely also take some set pieces from Matt Ritchie.
Yeah. I think successful take-ons is another thing to look at.
Especially he is going to make some Premier League teams look silly.
Almiron is such a non-Newcastle player in the sense of what they've been under Benitez that I'm very intrigued. Well,
that's what's interesting, because Almiron is a reversion back to what a Newcastle player used to look like.
Yeah, way back before they were.
Before Mike Ashley.
Yeah, before Mike Ashley. It's going to be an interesting situation to monitor. I think you need to spend the money to get him, right, for Fantrax?
Oh, I definitely would agree. I am completely hanging my hat on MLS and Miguel Almiron performing in Fantrax leagues. And I'm quite annoyed knowing that Sean has a lot more money than me in the league that we are in and will get Almiron over me.
Yeah, unfortunately, I lost out to another member of our 12-team Fantrax league on Juan Gonzalo Higuain. I will be able to get Almiron now. I'm happy about that. Because everyone knows I'm going to be spending that much on Almiron, I guess we'll talk about the next attacking asset in midfield, and that is one Denis Suarez. He's joined Arsenal on loan for the remainder of the season with an option to buy as part of the agreement. I don't really rate him as highly as most people, or I guess Arsenal do, and it's just because, and obviously it comes with kind of a weird scale. He couldn't get into that Barcelona team. Most people can't. Obviously, Arthur's been preferred to head to him lately. Do you think this is a desperation move in Arsenal?
No, because I wouldn't say it's a desperation move, considering that Emery knows exactly what he's getting, because this is a player he's coached before. What I think this is one, because he can play literally any position in the attacking band, is that this is an upgrade over Iwobi.
Well, my argument is that, is he an upgrade over Ramsey?
Well, they're not getting an upgrade over Ramsey in the January window.
I think that they should have just re-signed Ramsey instead of bringing anyone else.
That's not possible with the Arsenal wage structure.
Yeah, I guess you're right. That is a moot point. So I do think, I guess Suarez will probably bring more of an impact than Iwobi. At the same time, though, I mean, 6.5 in FPL, that's got to be too high, right?
Oh, I'm not even thinking about touching him in FPL. But considering some of the names that are being trotted out in some midfields, including my own, where I had to start Ruben Loftus-Cheek from the bench this week, he's definitely worth taking a flyer on. I wouldn't necessarily use my top waiver claim I wouldn't use my top waiver claim. But if you're a mid claim, there's worse things, because He can likely get some assists setting up Lacazette and Aubameyang. He has actually extremely good successful take-on numbers. It's just the key passes aren't there.
So are you expecting him to walk into the starting 11?
I don't think anyone outside of Lacazette and Aubameyang are guaranteed walking into an Arsenal starting 11.
So I guess if you were in a league for Fantrax where you have waiver dollars for your claims, how much would you be willing to put on Suarez?
Do I have to answer this because I'm potentially bidding on Suarez myself?
I guess I'll give you. I won't put you on the spot to do that. But would it be over 10 or under 30? Yes. Would it be in between 10 and 30?
Yes.
Okay. We'll move on to the other midfielder that people will be looking at. Leicester City have signed Yuri Tielemans from Monaco.
If they made this move 3 years ago, I'm over the moon.
Yeah, I mean, he would have been the perfect sparring partner for N'Golo Kanté. Obviously, now he comes into the team. He's going to most likely be playing alongside Wilfred Ndidi. It's very interesting dynamic because you have Nepal's Mendy, who's, in my opinion, been very solid this season.
But not fantasy useful, so we don't really care about him. No, of course not.
I'm thinking of your... Have a club who's a manager who's been on the hot seat that we talked about last week.
Well...
Now he's no longer because they drew Liverpool.
What if, actually, this just came to mind, but remember how Puel likes to start his defensive lineups at home and his attacking lineups away? What if Yuri Tielemans is his away lineup?
Well, then that would make it a lot harder to put a fantasy value on him.
Oh, I still don't know how to put a fantasy value on him to begin with, so...
I mean, I'll do my traditional take on a player, which is, you know, looking at his numbers. And in Ligue 1 this season, he averaged 1.8 shots per game, one key pass.
Okay, I'm inclined to throw out everything that has happened with Monaco this season. Just because that entire team has been a shit show. I don't... know what they're doing,
but so
why they went from one manager to Thierry Henry back to the manager that they fired.
Still, 5 goals in 20 appearances is a solid return for a central midfielder who tends to spend more time playing deeper than further up the pitch.
But it's Ligue 1. Like, he's likely also playing against a lot of crap.
I still think Tielemans has a very, I wouldn't say a very solid to mid-high ceiling. If he's playing in a... Because obviously you have Ndidi as the anchor of that.
His comp is probably Ruben Neves.
Yeah, I could...
Useful, not necessarily exciting, occasionally has a stellar game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess would you say the championship is a better precursor in terms of what they're going to do in fantasy than Ligue 1 is?
Depends. Because of the way Neves got his points, like the fact that he wasn't a left back crossing them in for assists, and all of his goals were from outside the box, yes.
I didn't do the kind of deeper dive just because this was kind of...
It's deadline day, so...
Yeah, and this is, you know, obviously, well, on the other half, we had Adrian Silva going to Monaco on loan, and as we know from last season... the whole debacle with him trying to get in before the deadline closed. It'll be interesting to take a deeper look and see where his goals have come from and if they've been some inside the box, from outside the box, where his shot distribution would be.
I mean, if I can hold him on my bench and don't necessarily need to play him right away, am I going for Tielemans just because of his pedigree? Yes.
Yeah, I think that it's also tough with that lesser side because... You know, I would like to see him... I think him, Madison, and Ndidi would be a solid 3 in the middle of the park with having those two play deeper. But that's kind of anticipating that they'd be playing 5 in the midfield with one up top or playing a 3. I think with that club right now, it's probably best suited to play a 3-5-2.
A 4-5-1 could be really interesting with Leicester if they finally decide to just make Ricardo a winger. and potentially put Harvey Barnes on that other wing.
Yeah, so I guess that's a good point, too. I do like Harvey Barnes. He's one for the future, definitely.
They have a lot of players that can play in different positions now.
Yeah, Barnes is what I probably describe as a two-way. He's a two-way midfielder, and I think he does enough in terms of work rate from what I've seen. Obviously, most of that has been not at the Premier League level. It's just tough because in that Leicester team, you have a lot of comparable talents. And I guess to bring that to a head, in Tielemans, what kind of waiver claim would you be using? Would you be using something in the mid-range, higher, lower?
Definitely mid to low.
So would you rate him, if you had to put Almiron, Suarez, Tielemans, who do you think will have...
I mean, you just did the order, so...
Okay, that makes sense. In terms of points, you know, come the end of the season.
I think Tielemans will have bigger game scores than Suarez will, but I think Suarez will be more consistent.
Yeah, I think Tielemans, there's more...
We also just don't know where the game time is going to come from.
Yeah, the problem is there's more questions than answers at this point. I think out of those three, I think in terms of longevity and success, he's a lot closer to Almiron than Suarez is. The problem is I don't know if that'll be right away.
Yeah, like if you're in a keeper league, then I'm damn sure picking up Tielemans.
Yeah, I'm in a keeper league, and I did put in a bid for Tielemans. I guess we'll move on to some of the other signings that are, I guess, a little bit less exciting from fantasy. But it's important because we talked about last episode how Huddersfield Town would not sign a striker because they don't have enough money to. They hit around our budget range, but they did sign a striker, and that's Carlin Grant from Charlton Athletic. I don't know too much about him. From what I saw in the blurb that was posted, he's a 21-year-old forward who scored 14 goals this term. And he's listed at 5.0 in FPL.
If he can finish better than Steve Munya, he might get a couple Premier League goals.
Well, the quote I saw from Huddersfield Town's manager, Jan Stewart, is that he's a pacey, athletic forward who likes to play off the back shoulders of defenders. And it's a different dynamic than our other forwards. And that's interesting.
Isn't Departure supposed to be a poacher? He's not pacey, but...
The problem is you have two lumbering giants in Mounier and Departure. And you're bringing in, obviously, someone who's going to be your lead striker in the championship next year.
Sounds like a 4-4-2. Because you're not playing him to lead the line.
No, and the quote I saw from Grant after his signing was, "I came here to play, not to hide." Oh. I love that intensity, but...
Does he know where he's going?
If he's watched any game tape from Huddersfield Town this season, then he probably would be better off hiding. But still, I mean, look, at 5.8, let's assume he's starting or move to 4-4-2. Is he?
If he's a starter, I mean, I'm currently carrying Florin Andon on my bench as a 5.0 forward. Is he a better 5.0 third forward than Andon? Probably.
Yeah. I mean, it's always interesting when you see these kind of moves happen. And in my column this week, I had talked about how signing Jason Punch instead of a forward was putting a bandaid on a broken leg. They did sign a forward. However, I think they signed their leading scorer for next season in the championship, not their savior from relegation.
Well, I mean, they're just going to go into a straight-up possession game because with Punch and their midfield getting healthy again with Aaron Moy, like, this Huddersfield team has a better midfield than most of the bottom half of the Premier League.
Well, it's been tough for them, especially having Billing out recently, and as you said, Moy. So you have your two best players not playing. You have a midfield last week of Junior Bakuna. You had Kichunga playing in the wing, who, don't get me wrong, I like Kichunga in the championship. But not when you're fighting relegation.
Premier. Again, don't get us wrong. Huddersfield's still getting relegated. But this could be a sneaky move.
Look, I mean, if you're looking through a dart throw and maybe you're in an office league and you want to get 1 week like, "Ha, I told you." Yeah, maybe Carlin Grant at 5.0 is fine. But it's really only if you're looking for a budget guy in the area.
I mean, I consider it when I wildcard my FPL team.
And non-wildcarding, I mean, Punchin's also in consideration just because he starts and he's at 4.2, 4.3. But speaking of Bakuna, his brother, Leandro, signed for Cardiff City from Reading. He is a left-back, wing-back. This is going to be a short one. Would you consider adding him if you're in a deep 12-team league? Do they even do 14 leagues?
Goodness.
Do they do 14 leagues on Fantrax?
Not that I know of. I mean, I'm sure you probably could. Because I think I could add as many owners as I want. But realistically...
Is he going to play?
Do I care?
Well, if we're going to have that conversation, then we might as well get to my favorite forward of all time. Peter Crouch is back. Crouchy's back. He was part of a deal that sent Sam Vokes to Stoke City. Crouch goes to Burnley on a free.
I think Burnley just created the oldest team in the Premier League right now.
So you have Chris Wood, you have Ashley Barnes, you have Peter Crouch. It's safe to say that they have the tallest average height for forwards in the league now.
Oh, that's not even close. I mean, let's be real. Sam Vokes wasn't playing. Peter Crouch likely isn't going to play either.
Well, it's this move obviously has nothing to do with fantasy, and this is more just
mentorship.
The league straight up. And that, if you look at the table right now, you have Southampton, you have Burnley, you have Crystal Palace. They are all deadlocked, right above the relegation zone. You have Batshuayi to Palace, Peter Crouch to Burnley. Nothing going at Southampton.
Well, I mean, Southampton was trying to get Charlie Austin out. I mean, I think out of those teams, Burnley and Southampton are the most set at forward because Ashley Barnes just wants to keep scoring. Danny Ings looks like a class piece of business from Southampton. I think this is more just Peter Crouch has been in a relegation fight. Help our players stay out of another one because some of these guys have been relegated before on Burnley.
Yeah, so I guess the brain had out of Southampton, Burnley, Crystal Palace. If you had to pick one for the drop.
Palace.
Really? Even with Batshuayi coming in?
Let's remember that being with teams that don't play ridiculously on the counter and aren't better than most of their league, Batshuayi still hasn't done that much.
I mean, I think Batshuayi is a good signing, mainly just because now they don't have to play Ayew. And look, he's coming in. I think it's hilarious because his stock was so high after his time at Dortmund, but
Chelsea was stupid,
and they didn't sell. And it's gone down so much after his failed stint in La Liga. Look, I think he's
the fact that no one, including West Ham, the island of misfit forwards, would not buy Michy Batshuayi.
Well,
Crystal Palace wouldn't buy Michy Batshuayi.
It's hilarious that West Ham rejected the approach of Valencia for Chicharito. It would have been funny if they brought Batshuayi and sent him there. But look, I mean, it's interesting to look at. Overall, what's your takeaway from deadline day?
It's getting a resounding meh.
Yeah, I mean, it's every deadline day I go into it thinking something big's going to happen, and it just turns out that out of the last 3 years, the one that I did not have off was the exciting one. The last two, as you said, were meh. What's your favorite move of the day?
Is that a question? Because it's
Almiron. Outside of Almiron.
Because
I knew that's what you would say.
Outside of that, it's probably Tielemans because of the fact that I wanted him at Tottenham and was hoping that they would hijack the deal, but Spurs have decided that they don't need to make a signing because everyone behind them is floundering.
Yeah, that's a good point. I personally think that it was very stupid that they did not bring anyone in.
I don't think it is. And this is, hear me out, because this is not just my Spurs fandom here.
Okay, I want to hear this then. Because it's not your Spurs fandom.
Because Eric Dier is back from injury. giving them at least a closer to fit midfield. Wanyama's close, we think. Maybe, kind of, sort of.
He was...
As is Sissoko.
Yeah.
So, like, considering that they also have Harry Winks and Oliver Skip, Spurs could potentially have, like, 5 to 6 midfielders in the next 2 weeks.
Well,
for 2 to 3 spots.
My issue is that I think a goal and assist against Watford does not mean...
I'm not... That game against Watford was shit. I...
Are we not even going to say his name? We know who we're talking about. Lloriente?
He doesn't exist to me. But Son's back. And even though it's been extremely ugly, Spurs still picked up 6 points in their last 2 league games. And other teams didn't. The gap is, what, 7 points now?
Yeah, I mean, now that Son's back, it's, you know, I mean, I do think Spurs are going to be fine. I just think it's very, it's somewhat arrogant.
It's they deflating, didn't bring anyone in. But when the goal, as of now, due to already crashing out of the League Cups, is to make Champions League, I mean, can you really not already pencil Spurs into the top 4?
I mean, after Chelsea's performance.
And after everything that's been... That Sarri is just deflating his team by the week.
Look, I mean, I said to a friend of the program, Tyler Dunn, a couple weeks ago, United are going to finish 3rd. Spurs will finish 4th. Liverpool, I mean, Man City will finish
It might 3rd. Be the other way around, with Spurs finishing 3rd and United finishing 4th.
But it's going to be some combination of that. And, I mean, I guess this is probably a good spot to wrap up the show, since... We should talk about what happened with Chelsea. Obviously, there were some comments from Sarri after the match, talking about how the players have let him down. Higuain, I think, actually played decently well.
Yeah, I mean,
his first match.
I have no issues with how Higuain performed in that game, considering that even though you may know what the manager's tactics are, that doesn't necessarily mean that your teammates are going to know when you're going to make those runs and where to find you. Like, his movement, he was doing the right thing. But you need chemistry. You need time. This is why January signings are always hard, because they don't realistically end up making an impact until February and March.
I mean, the other thing to consider, too, is that there are certain occasions where you just have to hand it to the opposition. And Eddie Howe's side, I thought Bournemouth in the second half.
But I get it. I don't want to discredit Bournemouth in this whatsoever.
Look, in the first half was back and forth, but in the second half, they took their chances clinically.
That's because, and also, Chelsea just gave them the ball. You see Bournemouth is literally countering you. You don't try long passes that are going to set them up for just hoofing the ball down the field. But no, Chelsea just decided, we're not going to change our tactics.
Well, I do think that this was more of Chelsea putting the white flag up.
I mean,
at the same time,
the onus on that loss is 100% on Sarri and Jorginho.
And the Three Musketeers, formerly of Napoli. It's funny that Higuain was the one guy that kind of comes out of there with being, oh, he got... You know,
I mean, you can't,
Don Rungley with being substituted.
You can't blame the new striker for not scoring when...
Well, he was involved in that first chance. I believe he either headed off the crossbar or he was right involved in there.
I mean, every Chelsea shot was straight at the goalkeeper or rolling at the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Like, how many saves did Brook pick up in that game?
Well, that's another... Funny thing, you know, they make a keeper change, and I do think that there was more at play than...
That's because Begovic
is
awful.
It's like Chelsea can't get away from themselves in this game.
The defense had to lose confidence in Begovic. If you don't trust your keeper, you're not going to defend properly for them.
So while I do think this was more of a Chelsea cowering at adversity than it was Bournemouth throttling them, although I think the Cherries do deserve more credit... The big thing out of here is David Brooks.
I mean, I was on the Derrick Brooks hype train from the start, and I still can't believe what I'm looking at right now.
If you own him in a draft league in Fantrax, are you trying to sell high, or are you keeping? Do you think the longevity is that he's in the, for the long run, or you think he's going to be a flash in the pan?
I held him in one league and sold him in another, and I'm already regretting the league that I sold him in. So I think you've got to just keep on rolling, because the question earlier was he going to lose a spot to Junior Stanislaus?
Now well, we can see they
he's
can
already proven he's better than Stanislaus.
We can see they can coexist.
Well, I don't know if they'll coexist once Colin Wilson's actually back, but
that's the other thing to consider. There was no Wilson.
Yeah, which is why it's like Brooks stepped up and Ryan Frazier wasn't involved in a goal in a game in which Bournemouth yeah. scored more than two goals, which I don't believe has happened this season.
I was perplexed when I looked at that match in the day that Frazier wasn't involved. But I do think there's something to say. Bournemouth, I don't see a way they finish lower than eighth at this point.
I mean, if they keep up anything close to this, and considering the fact that the Nathaniel Klein signing looks like they had the right idea, I'd see they probably pass Wolves.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting them, Wolves, and Watford.
Unfortunately, kind of. Like, no one can pass sixth.
Yeah.
So it's just like, who's going to finish seventh?
Mm. Yeah, well, I think we probably got everything from deadline there that was relevant. I mean, the only other thing I wanted to mention, just because I think he has a future in the Premier League, Wolves failed to sign a striker from Rubin Kazan, said our eyes.
Well, I mean, Fulham probably had the biggest failure to sign in having a right back, but Bordeaux decided that they were just not going to pick up the phone.
Yeah, Sadar Azamon was the guy I was talking about, Rungazan, and then, yeah, that's...
In the year 2019,
yeah.
We don't pick up the phone on deadline day.
Yeah. I don't think those signings will be enough to keep Fulham up. It's going to be interesting, though, but I am happy that Crouch is back in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's always a good day.
Yeah, and that will do it for this special live transfer deadline day episode. Chuck, do you want to tell the folks where they can find us?
You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Remember, check us out on Twitter @